the quality of our questions determines the quality of our lives, because each question we ask has a curiosity buried within, that when we ask the right question, there's a drive inside of us that we need an answer to that question. I could have answered the question, why does it happen to me? Which lots of sick people do, and I really did ask those questions, but I didn't stop there.
Welcome to the Curious Advantage podcast, an exploration of the idea of curiosity and its increasing importance for thriving in the digital age, from the authors of The Curious Advantage.
Hello, and welcome to this episode of the Curious Advantage podcast. My name is Garrick Jones, and today I'm here with my co-author, Simon Brown.
Hello.
And we're delighted to be joined by Christian Cressman. Hello, Christian.
Hi, nice to meet you guys. Thanks for having me.
And welcome to the Curious Advantage podcast, Christian. Christian, you're an actor, you have a PhD in creativity, and you're a systemic coach. Your work explores how curiosity fuels creativity. It's right in our wheelhouse and helps ideas become both new and useful. Shaped by a life-changing misdiagnosis in his 20s, Christian brings a unique perspective to coaching and research, helping leaders and creators focus their energy and act with clarity. You also bring these themes to life in film, telling stories that balance humor, fragility, and courage. Christian, it's a fascinating story about how you got here and what you're doing. So you've got this journey from acting and theater to chemistry, physics, and learning and development. It's really broad and amazing. And how did curiosity guide you through these different paths, and how did it shape your focus on creativity?
Well, thanks for the question. It sounds so spread out, I know, but basically it's all the same. It's all about creativity or creative problem solving, just applied to other dimensions of life. When I was 12 years of age, I remember I was fascinated by the TV show MacGyver, the one who could, fix atom bombs from exploding with just a chewing gum and a ball pen. And I was intrigued by how he approached life. And I also got into making art and making music just from an early age, promoted by my parents. I think that kind of kept me through the ages. So I started playing guitar when I was 14, but not thinking of it for being special. I just loved doing that kind of work, being curious, so to speak, for all the things that I can learn. And that translated into my studies then, because I was curious in science and because I was introduced into MacGyver. And the closest thing that would meet his daily life would be chemistry and physics, in my opinion, back then. And so I started studying chemistry and physics. I was always driven by curiosity to explore how the world works. And that same holds true for how human beings work. So I just didn't know any better. So I was curious about how the mechanics of interaction and, resilience, leading yourself, mindset, and all that are going, which brought me into coaching. And I didn't name it curiosity back then. I just was curious about those things and wanted to learn more about it. And finally, this all came to summarize it all in my PhD then, because then I had the chance to, that's how you call it, what I was doing all the time, being curious or being creative and solving problems creatively, which I then did in my employment at a large company, in my self-employment. And the same is true for acting, coaching, and filmmaking. And we can explore more about this in a few, but that's just the gist.
And then you got from physics and science into creativity and creative problem solving. And that was the core of your PhD research, wasn't it? So what creative problem solving then for you?
According to LinkedIn Learning, it is the most desirable skill that companies desire in employees. And I think we can see it in our world right now that it is kind of getting complex with AI on the forefront, with AI emerging and kind of attacking organizations as how they are right now and how they do business as usual. It all gets very complex. And this is actually what creative problem solving means, to deal with the most complex problems in a way that they can be managed. So basically, creative problem solving means the more complex a problem is, the more variables they are, the more creative we need to be to solve this problem. So the more out-of-the-box thinking and original approaches we need to make a meaning out of this situation that we don't know anything about it, and then, well, come up with ideas, solutions, and all that.
So that feels like that's a skill that is becoming more and more required, and the problems that we need to solve are getting more and more complex. There are more and more variables. How has your research shown that we go about tackling those, or what's your suggestions for how we deal with some of these? Some people would say sort of wicked problems of these, huge sort of complex things of, you know, how do we navigate through uncertain future? How do we deal with geopolitics and all that's going on? These are big complex problems. Where do we start to tackle those?
Well, you mentioned my research or my work, and that was where I combined my coaching expertise or background with my studies. Well, I couldn't help it. It was just me being curious about that topic, so I did it. And I found great support from the Creative Problem Solving Group in Buffalo, New York, and they already did amazing research and practical applications of individualized creativity. So the basic questions is not how creative are we? What they ask is how are we creative? So what is our approach to creativity? So a very individualized, tied to personal aptitude and preferences approach. And this is, in my opinion, the way out of solving those complex problems, because we need to look at all the different people, how they prefer to deal with problems, what are their strengths, what are their capabilities, and how can we use them in those evolving companies. It can be compared with writing, maybe to give a good example. So, Simon, are you right or left-handed?
I'm right-handed, yes.
Good. So you can write your signature with your left hand as well, right?
Not very well, but I could have a go.
yeah. That's the point. You could do it somehow, but you prefer to do it with your right hand. That is what preference is. And the same is true for creativity. Let me give an example. When being creative, we need to process information. Some people prefer to do it by speaking with them. My father does so. When he says, "Chris, I want to talk," I said, "Oh God, he wants to talk, but not to get a conversation." But that's the way how he processes his information. And then afterwards, after 30 minutes of him speaking, he says, "Wow, what a good conversation it was." And some people are more introverted and they like to digest information more with pen and paper on themselves. And there are other dimensions to creativity, but this is individual preferences of how we like to approach complex problems, how we like to address all the different dimensions of creative problem solving. And I think with focusing on those individual preferences within the people of the organization, we can help navigate those challenging times.
So are we talking about collaborative problem solving and collaborative creativity, or are we talking about individual problem solving? What context or what logical level are we focused on? And my question then leads to, imagine there's a complex problem that needs solving. How would you recommend we go about it?
Well, first of all, I really hated this question in my PhD because it's all kind of combined and tied together. It is an academic way of nitpicking. The practical applications in the real world are, well, I like to be more hands-on and not to divide collaborative problem solving, individual problem solving, creative problem solving, all that. We can do that for academic purposes, but they're all overlaps in the real world. So if we do it together, like you and I, Garrick, talk about a problem, it is kind of collaborative problem solving. If I then go in the back of the room and think about it, well, it would be individual problem solving to some extent, but you had your influence. So I don't find it very meaningful and important to...
Because we're moving between these modalities all the time.
Yeah. I think there is a reason to do that in academia, but for practical applications, I don't think it is necessary to divided there properly. But to answer your question, hands-on problem solving, the biggest mistakes people do is they merge the two phases of creative thinking together, which shouldn't be merged or combined together. They try to come up with ideas, but at the same time, they censor themselves or evaluate, are they any good? Does that make sense? And whatever. So they hinder themselves in the two different ways of thinking. So the real deal is to just separate those thinking styles. So there should be a clear brainstorming phase, and then afterwards we can comment and evaluate all those shitty ideas, but not at the same time. So if we're in a company, it would be really helpful to allow for people to just go crazy with ideas and not censor them and not evaluate them, but give them time to let them come up with the weird stuff and frame it in a way that it's okay to be weird at this stage. Later on, we can say if it's good or if it's bad. And for that as well, just to bring in the individual aspect, it would be helpful to look at all the different people. So what I found in the PhD, just last comment on that, is that inclusion or diversity goes hand in hand with creativity, because we need those out-of-the-box thinking. We need to have those outside perspectives from people that are different and other than us. So this is, in my opinion, the combination of diversity, inclusion, and creative thinking and all that.
Yeah, that was where my mind was going, because as you were describing sort of those preferences for different ways of thinking, it sort of went to actually, therefore, in getting to the best possible, most creative answer, presumably having a very diverse set of people with different ways of thinking, different preferences, brings you into that strongest answer. And I guess then it sounds like from then the two phases, if the first is that sort of divergence, get lots of ideas out there, and then you converge on the rest, then that first phase, presumably diversity plays a critical role in that.
Yeah. But I think the underlying theme is curiosity, to be honest. Because we have to be curious in both aspects. So coming up with all those new ideas, be curious about the different people, the different mindsets, the different backgrounds and all that. Or if I see an idea that I don't understand why they do that or why they came up with that, just be curious about, well, why did they? And then later on, we do need the curiosity as well to, in how many ways can this fail or suck, to be honest? So how can we still make it happen, or what needs to be done that it's still valid? And we need to be curious about all the potential pitfalls that we can tap into.
So a divergence from where we're heading, but my own curiosity is playing on me. So Garrick, in his introduction, sort of sowed the seeds of a curious question around how you were shaped by a life-changing mid-diagnosis in your 20s. And my curiosity is playing on me as to what was this thing that shaped your life and you know, what you're doing now. I'm curious.
Well, thanks for asking. I think that was my real PhD in creative problem solving, because that was the real world application of what I did. And I did my PhD later on after being diagnosed. So I was diagnosed when I was 22 with a multiple sclerosis, which then turned out to be a false diagnosis in such a way that there isn't any explanation yet why this happens or why certain conditions happen to people. And well, doctors just say, well, it might be a good fit for multiple sclerosis, I don't know. Just really abbreviated. And he gave me a look into my future. So he told me, well, Mr. Cressman, looking at you being half-blinded, describing all the symptoms, the severity of your symptoms, well, you might end well in a wheelchair and blind by the age of 32. Well, I'm 32. I'm really good. I'm not in a wheelchair. I do sit, yeah. But the solution to that was my endeavor for being really, really creative, because I didn't want to accept this explanation. And I really went through lots of papers. And, well, I was desperate, of course, because with that view I had into the future, I wouldn't accept it.
Can you talk a little more about this? So it's an awful situation. There's a terrible diagnosis with a terrible prospect, which is a shock, right? Shock to the system. And I can't really imagine just the impact of that. But what you're saying is that it led you to take a creative path to solve and figure out a way forward. Can you talk a little bit more about what you did? Where was the creativity? What did you do that was outside of the ordinary?
So as you said, I was on a crossway, so I had two choices, either to accept it and be devastated by it, or to not accept the circumstances and ask the right questions. This is what drives me in my work as a coach, or this is also what drove me in my employment back then, that the quality of our questions determines the quality of our lives, because each question we ask kind of has a pulling or kind of a curiosity buried within, that when we ask the right question, there's a drive inside of us that we need an answer to that question. So I could have answered the question, why does it happen to me? Why am I so punished by the universe or whatever? Which lots of sick people do, and I really did ask those questions, but I didn't stop there. Instead, I asked a question which may sound weird, but first, how can I make this, what is happening right now to me, to be the source of my greatest bliss in life? So how can I transform this into something valuable for me? That was one major mental help aspect. And the practical questions for solving the situation was, all right, what information exists there about this diagnosis?
You're listening to the Curious Advantage podcast, inspired by the book The Curious Advantage, written by Paul Ashcroft, Simon Brown, and Garrick Jones. Subscribe to the podcast today.
Just to bring it back to your coaching and to what is your recommendation to ordinary people, everyday people, in terms of curiosity and how they should apply this in our everyday lives from what you've learned?
I think everyone does, but most of the time people don't allow themselves to pursue their curiosity, or they're trained by society or whatever to not do in a way that they would love to do, to ask the questions that they really care about, because they are afraid that asking the questions will upset the person who gets it, or they're unsure about what will happen. So I think most of the time people refrain from following their inner heart or really asking the questions that they have within themselves. So my guidance or my suggestions is to really, really try asking the question that you have inside of you that comes with a burning that doesn't go away.
So don't be afraid of the difficult questions. Don't be afraid of the things you might be afraid of. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yes.
Face the difficult questions, ask the things that you, perhaps when you talk about the burning, the things that you really want to know, but you might be afraid to know the answer to, you're saying, go there.
Well, that is my experiential answer. When I was diagnosed, one of the most pressing questions is, well, this is the end of my life now, or isn't it? And then the next question was, what if this is the end? How do I want to pursue the rest of it? So I was kind of faced with my own mortality early on, asking me the question, how do I really want to spend my life on Earth? And I'm making it consciously that big.
Which is a big question to be asking. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. And it changed everything. And it reminds me all day, each day, that do I really want to piss that guy or that girl off? Do I want to be rude, or do I want to be... No, I don't want to be that person. Of course, it doesn't work every day. No, it doesn't. But it's always a reminder of how do I want to be. And that was just an example of asking the big questions, or not being afraid to ask those questions.
It sounds like that experience, though, is then things changed, and it sounds like, as you say, it's a misdiagnosis. And now, you know, that isn't the path that you've ended up on. But that process that going through that, it sounds like you've made a conscious choice to keep some of the mindset that you achieved through that process.
Well, it could have been my presence. If I wouldn't have asked those questions, I would just end up in the medical system. They would have treated me well, not right, I guess, because they don't ask those questions. It's not common in the medical system in Germany to ask those kind of questions. The system isn't designed for that. So it was kind of how it was, but I didn't plan for this to happen, of course.
Absolutely. So I'd like to come on to some of your other work. So I understand you were involved in designing immersive learning environments. There was some things there, I think, involving escape rooms. Tell me more on what you did there and the linkage, I guess, of how Curiosity took you into those immersive learning environments.
I think, again, it was MacGyver's ghost inspiring me. But to paint a picture, when I did this escape game designing room, I had this condition. I wasn't over it. So I had this fear of how will I end up? Will I wake up and my eyes blind again, or I'm blinded again, or I get paralyzed in the leg and all that? That was kind of my daily routine, to wake up and worry and then manage myself to other states. So there was real training in being curious and solution oriented. Then I had the idea, can we somehow transfer this into learning applications? Because I studied, I'm a former physics and chemistry teacher, so I studied learning and pedagogy. I was always so bored with classical teaching, and I did want to change it. And that transferring process kind of was inspired by MacGyver and being curious. I didn't invent the escape game concept, and I didn't neither invited for the pedagogical department, but just transferred back to chemistry and physics education. Because, that's how I grew up. I watched him doing those unusual things, solving problems with nothing at hand. And I learned so much about it. And that inspired me to, can we create this consciously? Can we create an environment that is fun, that feels like a play to people, where they just go about it and learn stuff? So what we created was, We designed a complete room, like a hall, a storage room with locks and barriers and chains to lock different areas. And the students need to try some chemical and physical experiments with that. For instance, find out about the voltage of a lemon battery. And if it's in that area, it is the digit 1 for the lock. And so they combined all those experiments, gathered all those numbers to open up the locks section by section to end up in the very middle or center of that area, where there was, of course, sweets, snacks, candy, and all that. And the final key to get out of it. And the feedback from the two test groups we had was amazing. They did really, really well. They enjoyed so much being in that room and working collaboratively together, which they did, and being creative together, because they had to. Some experiments were designed in a way that they needed two or three persons working together on one problem. Otherwise, they wouldn't get the answer. Like someone's holding a rope and another one is turning a toggle later on, so that it would create kind of a ripple effect in that design, just to get that number, of course. And all that included into some chemical or physical experiments, which was, of course, the reason. We wanted to make chemistry or physics education fun and just don't let people finish it. Inspired was it by the idea that people actually like to go into escape rooms. I didn't know about it before that, but the idea was just, that was maybe me being creative. Can we use that already existing concept just for educational purposes?
And this was in the context of school-age kids, college-age kids. That was
10th grade and then above.
Fantastic. Yeah.
And I also did it then when I also gave my own lectures in my PhD phase for chemistry students. I taught the concept to teachers in Germany in a reduced form. So how can we transfer that into a daily classroom business?
It's fascinating. I mean, the idea of the different ways of teaching, different ways of getting the point across, especially in the new world that we're inhabiting. And one of the things we mentioned earlier was AI. What is your view on AI and how that's going to impact or is impacting the learning environment, or what changes are coming to us that you perhaps have some insight on?
I think we feel it, that it kind of changes the way how we think, or how we need to think. It isn't a new thing. It was the same with the calculator when it emerged, when it came. Well, we had an assistant to not write those equations on a paper and we could accelerate our process, but it kind of changed the skills we have. And I think the same is true for AI, that it changes the skills that we have. If we do it consciously, I think it is very helpful. If we don't do it consciously, I think it can be quite challenging for us or for our future. For AI, we don't have to come up with the ideas in such a way that we have to really think about how many, maybe 100 ways, how we can teach that topic in a classroom or in a company for the L&D department. But we have to understand the implications of the answers that AI gives us. So if it comes up with 100 ideas, we still have to make sense out of them. We have to think more strategic, in my opinion, instead of being tactical. So guiding this intelligence in a way that we want, not just accept all the answers that it gives us. We can also, of course, use it to teach people about critical thinking, creative thinking as well, because there are two dimensions to it, the divergent and convergent thinking. And we can use it to create a learning path with them. I did so in a coaching program I gave to ask the group, how can AI be your coach? And can you create or pre-frame the AI to coach you based on the knowledge that we gathered in the educational training to coach you through that particular topic, but on the methods that we used? So they had to kind of teach the skills to another entity, which was really good for learning. And then they could benefit from the fruits, and they kind of were very creative in that aspect. We can go very deep into all the different applications of AI, because I'm really a fan of playing around with it.
Yeah, you and us both, so it's certainly where we're spending a lot of our thinking time at the moment. Maybe on that, I mean, you've described yourself as being hugely curious and fascinated by the MacGyver influences as well that have appeared throughout your career. But what at the moment are you most interested in or most curious about? So, I mean, where is your curiosity being pointed at the moment?
I'm really intrigued by how economics will change with the current Trump regime. So I liked America for quite some time. I've been there, I have friends there, and I see the impact of his decisions on German economy. Like the automobile economy is really suffering from the Zölle, but please, I don't know the English word for that, the fee that you have to
the
pay.
Tariffs, yes.
Yes, that's about 102,000 people were laid off due to these changes, because the automotive industry isn't sure where it's going, where it's heading. And I find it very interesting to look into this future. How is German economy changing based on the decisions of one man in another country? And what are the connections and the interactions of this global economy, political decisions? And how am I, as Christian, in Berlin, being impacted by them? Well, one thing is prices on butter and milk and orange juice are increasing. So there, we can see that. And I cannot change it, of course. But I'm really curious about how it all will play out.
Christian, we'd love to spend more time talking with you, but we have to bring it to a close. And I'm going to ask you just to think about one thing you'd like to leave our listeners with. What would that be? But before you answer that, I'm going to try to summarize some of the things you've talked about with us today in this fascinating conversation. It has been from how you move from physics and science to art and creative thinking, and specifically your coaching, but also how that impacts decision-making. And you talked about how you solve complex problems using creativity, and you think it's a required skill for solving wicked problems, or because in order to navigate through these complex worlds, we need to use creative problem solving, and we need to look at the people, which you've said, and look at the people that we're working with, trying to get underneath what their preferences are and what makes them make the decisions they do, and how does that impact us all together? We talked about the practical application of the hands-on and being hands-on, and how that impacts us. And then we talked about not self-censoring and not being afraid of the questions that we ask and asking the questions through the brainstorming and in the evaluation, you said it's okay to go crazy and try and encourage leaders to allow people to go crazy and to ask the difficult questions. We talked about diversity and how that goes hand in hand. And we need the diversity to take us beyond ourselves. And curiosity is really so much about different people and learning from them. And you said something which has stayed with me, which I think is really one of my take-homes, is that the quality of our questions leads to the outcomes in our lives, which, if I just reflect on that for a moment, is an enormous statement and which is rings so true, that the quality of our questions leads to the quality of the outcomes of our lives. And you've demonstrated that in your own life, and not accepting a diagnosis and not allowing yourself to be put into a common medical protocol, you went outside and you were curious, and you came across different protocols which have led to life-changing results for you. We talked about the question making and how we need to learn and appreciate, you know, the classical learning. You talked also about some of your explorations in learning and pedagogy, and really making physical experiences and labyrinths and escape rooms, where you've proved that by creating these learning paths in these physical environments creates for a phenomenal learning experience, which of course then has impacts for AI in our conversation around what AI is doing to the learning journey and the learning paths, and how we can ask better questions because of AI, and we can also teach other entities frameworks, which of course it changes the way that we learn. But you talk about it as a positive impact, a positive opportunity for new learning across the board, organizations, schools, and so on. I mean, it's so fascinating talking to you, and it's brilliant hearing your own stories. So, Christian, if there's one thing you'd like to leave our listeners with, what would it be?
Well, can I piggyback your show?
For sure.
Well, it is stay curious, or if you aren't, allow yourself your inner curiosity to come out, because that changed all the things in my life. But I didn't realize it until I needed it the most.
Christian Cressman, absolutely fascinating talking with you. Thank you for coming on The Curious Advantage. We had a great conversation. Thank you.
Thanks to you guys.
Thank you.
This series is about how individuals and organizations use the power of curiosity to drive success in their lives and businesses, especially in the context of our new digital reality. It brings to life the latest understandings from neuroscience, anthropology, history, art, business, behaviorism about curiosity, and makes these things useful for everyone. You've been listening to a Curious Advantage podcast. We're curious to hear from you. And if you think there was something useful or valuable from this conversation, we encourage you to write a review for your podcast on your preferred channel, saying why this was so and what have you learned from it. We always appreciate hearing our listeners' thoughts and having a curious conversation. Join today at hashtag Curious Advantage. Curious Advantage book is available on Amazon worldwide, audio, physical, digital, or audiobook copy now to further explore the 7 C's model for being more curious. Subscribe today and keep exploring curiously. See you next time.
Thank you for listening to the Curious Advantage podcast. The Curious Advantage book is now available to purchase on Amazon. Stay tuned for the next episode and keep exploring curiously. This podcast is produced by Jessica Wickham.